Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Oh. Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will.
Oh, yes.
Hello, welcome to 10 Backwards, a UK Star Trek podcast. Joining me today is this man, Will Turland.
Greetings.
And this man, Richard Palmer.
Bonjour.
They are joining me, Rick Everson. And for the first time on 10 Backwards, we have a special guest. We have Rob.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, Rob.
Great to be here.
Hi there.
Hi. Great to have you.
Yeah, absolutely. Rob's been interacting with us on Twitter a little bit, and we thought, it's maybe time for a guest. So we've invited him on. He's very kindly accepted. Do you want to tell us a little bit, Rob, about yourself and how you got into Star Trek?
Yes, my name's Rob Chapman. Some of you might have interacted with me on Twitter. I'm at Trekkie Rob. And how did I get into Star Trek? I've been into it like kind of since I was 10, 11, 12. Started with DS9 and Voyager, watched all the films, went back and watched TNG, watched Enterprise. Haven't watched so much of the original series, but that's changed thanks to you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, because today, inviting Rob on, we've decided to go with an original series episode. We're looking at the third series episode, The Savage Curtain, today. Richard, you picked this subject. Any particular reason? Anything about this spoke to you?
Originally, I watched it just because I wanted to watch an original series episode, and I knew it was one where Captain Kirk teams up with Abraham Lincoln to fight evil, and I thought, that sounds pretty cool. That sounds like a great episode, and at the very least, an interesting one. So I watched it, and I find myself enjoying it a lot. There's a lot about it I really like, and not just the story, but also kind of, there's a lot of charm to it, I found. And also, the story is pretty interesting when you get down to it, what they were trying to do. It maybe doesn't pull it off quite as well as they hoped, I think. The idea is really interesting. But yeah, in general, I think it's a good episode. I think William Shatner's really good in it. And I thought it was one I was going to talk about when we did our war episodes, because it does kind of touch on the kind of good versus evil aspect of conflict. But mainly, I just like the bit at the start where Abraham Lincoln turns up in space, and then it goes on from there.
Yeah,
and I thought, let's talk about that.
When I was watching it, I kind of thought Shatner wasn't really that into it. Now, you say Shatner is really good. I kind of felt like he was a bit like, I don't know. I know that the original series was cancelled around this time. There's only two more episodes, and I kind of wonder if he knew and checked out, because at times he just didn't seem that bothered.
I don't know. I mean, I like all the stuff when they go down to Excalibur, is it?
Excalibur.
It's got some interesting scenes there in terms of like the little battle they end up having with the evil guys. There's some good planning.
Yeah.
They have like a little redoubt where they kind of defend themselves. And it's all right.
See, I watched this episode. I knew of it. I don't think I'd seen it before. And I didn't have particularly high hopes for it because it was season three. And not one of the recognised good ones in season three. But it was kind of, I don't know, it's a recognisable episode. The whole Kirk teaming up with Abraham Lincoln thing is a kind of an iconic thing. Like, it's referenced in other pop culture, isn't it? I think this episode, to some extent. But man, yeah, this episode didn't do it for me. It's got some interesting stuff in it. But I didn't care for it, I got to admit. I thought it was, yeah, it's one of the weaker episodes. But it was fun, you know. It wasn't boring. It's just very silly.
Yes. Yeah. It struck me as a little lackluster.
Yeah.
At points, as I think Kirk was sort of just seemed a bit just seemed to bumble along. It's a bit like, oh, it's Abraham Lincoln, okay. And then just like, oh, there's a rock monster. Well, he sort of explained stuff. So
yeah. Should we talk about roughly what happens in the episode? So we touched on, there's a kind of a pre-credit sequence where Abraham Lincoln shows up in space. Yeah. And then roll credits.
They're surveying a planet where they say there's no life, essentially. Like,
yeah.
We'll do a bit more checking of this planet, and then there's probably not any life, so we'll go elsewhere. And then they say, well, wait a minute, there is something.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln floating towards us on a space chair.
It's kind of like, here's a space... Wait, it's like him in his... There's that statue of him, isn't there, in Washington, where he's sat in a
right,
chair.
Right, yeah.
Because it turns out that it isn't actually Lincoln. It's a version of... It's a heroic character born out of the mind of Captain Kirk.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's not... Although I don't think it's ever 100% established. That's kind of their best guess at what it
is,
isn't it?
It's transformed into Abraham Lincoln for the purpose of...
Hmm.
Well,
I think that was the insinuation, because they said
they don't have TV on this planet, so whenever a spaceship passes by, they're able to sense the ideas of the aliens, and they go, let's turn into some of these ideas of these aliens, and right?
yeah, I think so, because there is a line at some point in the episode where they talk about. Something like millions of people watching this.
Our world is called Excalpia. Countless who live on that planet are watching.
Which I didn't fully understand, but yeah, I think maybe the idea is that it is a kind of a form of entertainment on their planet. Maybe I don't know.
This is what they do for reality TV shows.
yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea that might have been some sort of pay-per-view.
Yeah, I'd be asking for a refund, I think.
Yeah, I can imagine a load of rock monsters gathered around their TV. Go ahead.
It reminds me a bit of the Sunkutsi episode of Voyager. I don't know if you've ever seen that one where it's wrestling and Seven gets in. Yeah, I can imagine it's a bit like that with hitting people.
Is that the one with the rock in?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
there is that sort of element. Like, it's not really explored, but they do reference it. It's kind of like this is their entertainment. Because I drew comparisons to something like Arena, where you've got a more powerful species pitting them against to observe. But it isn't just like, oh, we want to observe so we can say whether you're primitive or awesome. It's to, it's to fill up some programming hours. You know, we're sat at home. It's Friday night. We've got some stuff to watch.
Yeah.
It also reminded me a bit of, in Harry Hill's TV burp where he says he likes two things, but which is better? So I like evil, and I like good, but which is better? There's only one way to find out.
Fight.
And it is that kind of fight as well. That's the kind of fight they...
Yes. It is, yeah. So I had to say I wasn't overwhelmed by the fight choreography in this. A lot of it was everyone run towards each other, throw Genghis Khan on the ground and just roll around with him in an embrace for a while. And then...
Was it sticks and stones.
Yeah, it was. And thrown quite lightly.
the Excalibur says early on,
your choice of action is unlimited, as is your choice of weapons. Should you wish to use any, you may fabricate anything you desire out of what you can find around you.
It's mostly sticks.
Yeah, it's sticks and stones.
Two of the evil people don't get any lines as well. There's a space, like a space witch. Is there Zora?
Yeah. So let's go through all the characters actually.
So there's on the good team, there's Captain Kirk,
yeah,
Spock, Abraham Lincoln and
Surak.
Yeah.
And the evil forces, team there is Colonel Green, not the Cluedo guy. Zora, who I think is, she did some experiments on people. Genghis Khan and Kaelis.
Kaelis, yes, yeah. Which is interesting. So was Colonel Green? He was involved in a world war in the 21st century. I think they mentioned.
After World War III, he exterminated some humans who had mutations because of all the radiation.
Okay.
Yeah. He's in. You see, he's in the season 4 of Enterprise. The Terra Prime episodes. Peter Weller's character is watching a video of Colonel Green.
Right. Okay.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's some additional knowledge.
Kind of he's debating the morality of what Colonel Green did. Colonel Green essentially put to death hundreds of thousands of people, but they were people who would have passed on genetic mutations into the human.
I find it interesting, and I don't know if this is a clue into Kirk's psyche, that when they take from his mind the epitome of good and the epitome of evil, good is two people short, and Kirk and Spock have to make up the numbers.
Yeah.
That brings up my main quibble with the episode. They have the power to extract from people's minds that characters that they can build to such a minute detail, but they also bring in some real people. So why, if they can do that and then just let people pass on and go, why must they bring in? Oh, maybe that's why. Maybe they need to fill in the good.
Maybe they do.
That's all we could remember.
Yeah. He drew a blank.
They should have got Team Spock and Team Kirk. Like Kirk's imagination versus Spock's. Like that team.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. It's just for the benefit of the listeners, we kind of all introduced ourselves, but Gemma is also here.
We didn't introduce her. Pop in.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know.
Gemma's kind of a... Yeah, she's like an uninvited guest. for want of a...
That's the way I like to think
You know, myself. Always welcome, but never technically invited. Never invited.
Rob, you say you've not watched a lot of the original. How is this how is this as a representation of the original series to you?
I don't want to be unkind, but if this was my only reference point, I probably might not watch much more. I mean, there are some good points in it, you know, but it's almost like slapstick humour, like you're seeing Abraham Lincoln fight Genghis Khan, and the whole Zora character is just bizarre. But it's interesting. Yes. You can't say that. You can't take that away from it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I like that. Although it's not the best episode of original, it does give us some things that really last. In that we've got Surak and Kaelis, who go on to have a huge effect throughout Star Trek afterwards.
Yeah, that's really interesting that they, and this is the first instance of them showing up, right? They don't show up in any other, which it's interesting that, you know, in TNG they look back through all of original series and they kind of thought, oh, do you know what, that you know, the guy in that episode, the Savage Curtain, who does impressions of everyone, Kaelis,
especially if they're in trouble.
Yeah, let's bring him in. Let's have him as a clone in there. Let's have him a big part of Klingon culture. But yeah, he can do really accurate impressions of Sarek calling for help, can't he?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. We don't hear about the Klingons being great impressionists in any other episode, but
I'm assuming that when they pulled Kaelis from Kirk's mind, he was probably thinking about Rory Bremner or something.
Maybe, yeah, maybe he mixed the two up. And that's a good point. Yeah.
I noticed there's a bit in the episode where Kirk and Spock, the good team essentially, are working out what to do, and then it just cuts to a scene of the rock monster for like a couple of seconds, and then back. And I just like, well, what's that? What was that?
Yeah, that was really odd. There was another bit. I'm sure there was a really odd kind of slow motion shot of a close up of Abraham Lincoln for no particular reason. That was really jarring. But I don't know whether in the HD remasters there are a few scenes that aren't in HD for various reasons. I think a lot of the time the reasons were that the film had degraded too much, or the, I don't know, there's a scene missing, and so they're having to take that footage from another source. And I don't know whether, but it was odd, it was like a 3 or 4 second shot, so I don't know if that fits my theory, but yeah, there were some strange moments in there. It's interesting that the fight choreography is pretty weak. There's a line that Abraham Lincoln says where he's,
but how delightful to discover at my age that I can still wrestle.
And the fighting was very, they were literally just wrestling. It was like, you know, if you're at school and you kind of maybe got into a fight with everyone, like the whole school, with like some friends, but obviously it's play fighting, no one wants to actually hurt each other. Like, it made me think of that, like a little bit of a scrap on the field.
It's entertainment for these aliens, so maybe it's a bit like the WWE.
Maybe that's it.
Like Kirk's getting beaten up, all of a sudden Abraham Lincoln runs into the ring. There's a DDT on him, and then, yeah, puts him in a chokehold, and Kalis the Unforgettable taps out. And Kirk and Abraham Lincoln are tag team champions of you know, space.
Yeah.
It is a flawed episode, but I mean, I found myself finding it a lot of fun and bonkers. And I think that was something that was really good about the original series. It kind of had these relatively crazy ideas and generally managed to pull them off, but at least be entertaining.
Oh, you've got to give it credit for running with an idea.
Yeah.
What other high points do we feel the episode had?
Scotty in full dress uniform.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He's in a kilt. I liked everyone's dress uniform.
He's grumpy as hell. He's the most rational. He's the most rational character.
Yeah, I liked that Scotty was calling bullshit on Abraham Space Abraham Lincoln showing up. Like, he was the only one who was saying, "This is ridiculous."
Who's going to be next? Louis of France and Robert the Bruce. I mean, get a Scottish person in there. I noticed.
Yeah. But he made a really fair point that I didn't think anyone else was really listening to properly. Like, surely that absolute, no one could possibly think that really is Abraham Lincoln. Why is Kirk breaking out the dress uniforms? And his reason is, he says something like, well,
I don't for a moment believe that President Lincoln is actually coming aboard, but we're dealing with an unknown and apparently highly advanced life form. Until we know, when in Rome, we'll do as the Romans do.
So, what?
Is he breathing?
No.
He's dead.
I think they don't get to wear those dress uniforms very often, so they just like to break them out whenever they can.
Well, yeah, get the money's worth out of the costume budget, I suppose.
Yeah.
We get to have a good kind of ready room scene around that triangular table.
Yeah, yeah. They're always good value. And I liked that the rock creature was actually pretty alien. I mean, in most later Star Trek, whenever we meet an alien, there'll be some ridges on the nose, maybe a crazy ear, maybe spots, but they're usually basically humanoid. And although that rock creature doesn't look great, like, I like, it's endearing that they tried to do something pretty
that
alien.
Kind of cool. I liked his head. His head looked pretty cool. This weird kind of all eye thing. I agree. I know what you mean. Like, it didn't look fab, but I admire that they went to the effort to try and make it.
Yeah, yeah.
Something about that, I think. And weirdly, I think probably the original series had that.
Have you guys ever seen Dogma? The film Dogma?
Yes.
Yeah.
The rock creature looks like a creature that's in Dogma. I won't say the name of it. It's not flattering.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. It. Yeah, the poop. I don't. But they don't. They use another word, an expletive. Yeah, it does. But not like, as well animated as that though.
It doesn't look like a pile of poop.
It does.
It was a thought that had occurred to me. I didn't make the connection to Dogma, but I did think
dog turds.
Oh man, that looks like a big poo.
Because it steams as well. Doesn't
it?
It does steam.
Yeah,
it's like a fresh one.
I did kind of think it's interesting that in Star Trek V, William Shatner wanted big rock monsters, big smoking rock monsters. I was like, has he learnt nothing from this episode? But so I'm not sure how they would have turned out. Hopefully less poo-like.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting.
Go for it.
Oh, sure. So you were saying about you liked the whole that Scotty that was the only one that was saying, you know, hold on a minute, this isn't right. Why are you all falling for this? And I think later on, McCoy was saying to them that, you know, that you shouldn't go down to the planet, as where the other two were like, no, you know, our mission is to explore, you know, to meet new races. So if you were on the Enterprise, would you be on Team Kirk and Spock and go down, or would you be on Team McCoy and Scotty and be like, there's no way I'm going down there?
I'd be with McCoy, I think. I'd be with him because McCoy's totally calling it as a trap, and, yeah. and he's 100% right. And the second Kirk gets down to the planet and then realizes their phasers have been taken off him, he's like, yeah, it was a trap. Oh, curses. But I'd 100% be with Scotty. And
well, I think from the beginning, I wouldn't have been so keen to bring aboard what was clearly some sort of alien impersonating Lincoln and give him free access tour of the ship and everything. That just seems, from a security point of view, that seems like a really stupid idea.
And then it's another impression as well, I guess, isn't it? You're doing an impression of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you hang out with that Abraham Lincoln a bit more and just get a more reliable land.
Yeah, keep him in space a bit longer.
Yeah.
You know, where he's can't do any damage. Yeah. And I thought, actually, the ending of the episode confused me because there's a point where... so who is Colonel Green, I think, gets stabbed in the back kind of accidentally during the fight with Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk breaks his neck, doesn't he?
I thought he kind of got a little mini spear behind Colonel Green's back, and then he sort of fell onto it.
He took off Colonel Green, so it's okay because it was Colonel Green's weapon.
I thought he kind of killed him, but he didn't quite see it. They didn't want to show that.
Well, it was kind of off screen, I guess, wasn't it? Mm. So he died. And then Genghis Khan and that crazy witch lady do a legger. And then the rock monster's like, oh, good as one. It's like, well, wait a minute. No, because Sarek's dead.
Yes,
Abe Lincoln is dead. He got a spear in the back.
Are dead, aren't they?
Yeah.
Four rock monsters. Because it's rock monsters that have turned into these characters.
Yeah, but it was two sides against each other. They didn't care about their own people.
Okay.
Yeah, so my point is...
just rocks.
My point is the rock monster says good as one, but it hasn't, because 50% of good are dead, only 25% of evil
is
dead.
All of the created...
The bad guys run away.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they retreat.
I suppose been... good win by default.
Yeah.
Because evil ran away.
What if they were just reforming?
Yeah.
For another attack later.
It wasn't like they didn't establish there was any sort of time limit on when the fighting was going. It just seemed like it felt like the end of the episode was approaching, and so the story had to say the good guys have won.
Stay tuned next week for when some other aliens turn up. We create beings out of their minds.
Yeah,
and there's a bit of a kind of a lame discussion where where Kirk makes the point that because the rock monster says, well, what's the difference between good and evil? You know, you're both violent. And Kirk makes the point that he was fighting for the lives of the people on his ship, whereas the bad guys were fighting for, I don't know, power?
Yeah,
I think
for their own
says.
Ends.
But that isn't really what's happening, because they were kind of created by the rock monsters and they were fighting because that's what they were created to do. I
suppose it's how imbued with the personality.
Yeah.
It's how imbued with the personality that Kirk and Spock's mind had for these guys. Is it? I suppose. I did find it a little bit unrealistic that Good had two Vulcans with their increased amazing Vulcan strength.
Has
oft been referenced throughout the original series, how strong they are.
Mega strength.
And Spock could not overcome that one woman, and Surak couldn't overcome anyone. It's like, these dudes are supposed to be really, really tough.
But Kalis could do really good impressions, so, you know, there's a balance.
Yeah, he'll be back. He'll get his own Rock Monster TV show.
How do we think it would have gone if a month later a Pak-led ship had approached the planet?
I don't know.
It wouldn't have been. What kind of heroes did the Pak-led have? People that are good at making stuff go.
Yeah, I don't know.
That
is a good question, Rick.
It's just a thought that pops in my head. It's like, oh man, that would destroy their entertainment.
Yeah. What if the binars came by?
But to me
it was like, it felt like a retread of Arena. But not as good. But with the added nuttiness of some historical characters thrown in there, and I don't know, by season three standards, it's not the worst that season three has to offer. But it's not as hilarious as Spock's brain, which is a hilarious episode, but awful.
Yeah. Obviously, Arena is the classic where Kirk fights the Gorn. But yes, this episode kind of treads a similar path, but in not very effective a way.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, to my mind, that's kind of indicative of like weaker episodes of original series, where sometimes they'll feel like maybe two or three plot elements that are kind of plucked from other episodes, maybe thrown together to try and kind of create something new and it feels very... It feels like we come across that scenario quite a lot in the original series. An alien race judging the crew in some way, or judging humanity. A bit like Q does in Next Generation, I guess. But putting the main characters in a situation where they're forced to fight each other or fight someone else or be judged in some way. And it's... I don't know. Those episodes are never particularly thrilling, I think, except for Arena, which is great.
Yes.
Maybe it doesn't kind of. It doesn't go too. It doesn't go far enough into that idea. The idea is all right. It's just they kind of go, well, they're at this planet. These aliens have created versions of Abraham Lincoln and Surak out of their minds. And they're having their fight on this planet, whereas because they don't really kind of discuss the fact that Abraham Lincoln is Kirk's version of Abraham Lincoln rather than an actual Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, and actually that's one of the elements of the episode that I actually think works quite well, because the characters are kind of from the imaginations of the of Kirk and Spock, you can kind of forgive the fact that Abraham Lincoln's a bit of a kind of archetype. You know, he's sort of a stereotypical vision of what Abraham Lincoln would be.
He's a kind of a lionized heroic icon.
Yeah.
And
you know, the villains, there isn't, you know, Genghis Khan and Kalis, there isn't really much to their characters, but maybe that's because in the minds of Kirk and Spock, they just know that they're they're known as evil people from history. So I don't know, that felt like that kind of work. That gives you a bit of leeway in that episode.
The bad guys tend, they sort out their plan a bit quicker than the good guys. I would imagine them not agreeing with each other as much.
Yeah,
but they're like they seem to get on.
I guess
away.
Yeah, they all love doing murders. I guess so. They're straight away. They're like, well, obviously we're going to try and murder all the good guys. Whereas the good guy, there's because Sarek wants to make peace, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Which doesn't work out too well for him.
Yeah, it's killed.
Yeah. Basically goes as badly as it possibly could have done. Yeah. But at least Sarek tried. And, you know, it's at least there was a bit of variety in the episode in that respect. There's a bit of story going on there.
Do we think there's any ways that the episode could have been improved? Sorry, Rob.
No, I was just going to say, what did you... Because there was that bit... There was, like, the social commentary bit... when Kirk brings Lincoln onto the bridge and he uses an offensive term to Uhura, and then she kind of like brings him down.
Yeah, that's
right.
We don't care about words. We don't fear words anymore. I thought that was really, really good.
The charming negress. Oh, forgive me, my dear. I know that in my time, some use that term as a description of property.
But why should I object to that term, sir? You see, in our century, we've learned not to fear words.
Yeah, I
was actually, I was pretty worried as soon as Abraham Lincoln. What does he say? He says that she's
what a charming negress.
That's it. Yeah, and I was like, oh god, oh no! It's one of these episodes that's really unfortunately racist. But yeah, actually, it was. I thought Uhura kind of makes a really good point, and it's a very kind of Star Trek point that in their evolved future that words like that don't have a meaning anymore. And it was a kind of a nice moment, and actually it kind of worked because it did remind you that Abraham Lincoln is from a different time and has a completely sort of different outlook.
Well, it's actually. I'm glad you brought that up, Rob, because when you contrast that to Bada Bing, Bada Bang in Deep Space Nine, where Sisko has a serious issue with the racist undertones of Las Vegas in the '60s, and the fact that that's not properly portrayed in the Vic Fontaine program.
Mm.
It's kind of like, how does that work out? Is that future attitude? Because Sisko's clearly really bothered by it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting thought. That
maybe Dr. Bashir ordered that holodeck program from a holodeck program maker, didn't he? Because that whole Bada Bing Bada Boom, that whole scenario comes about because it's not being played correctly. So there's like a jack in the box that. Mm. So maybe Dr. Bashir said, just make sure not to make it too racist.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that whereas Uhura is like, meh, I'm not bothered about what you say now, you know, you're from the past, so
yeah,
so I'm not bothered by your words, whereas Sisko clearly is.
It's,
yeah.
I think that's a reflection of the times it was made in and the aims of the show. The original series was made at a time when probably not a lot of black people were actually involved in the making of it, plus they were trying to depict a beautiful future where these things didn't happen, there was no money, there's no racism, da da da, and these things happen. Whereas Deep Space Nine was made at a time when, you know, black people could say, let's bring up this issue, let's talk about this. People did want to talk about these things, and the general feeling was more, let's not forget this happened, let's talk about these things.
Yeah, I suppose
instead of imagining that it'll never matter in the future.
I suppose to an extent, and I might maybe say largely with the Gene Roddenberry controlled version of Star Trek is more like we've gone past this and everything is great and it's a lovely utopia. Whereas the Deep Space Nine take on it is like, it's really, really fucking difficult to get there, and it's, this is how the struggle goes.
Mm.
I think that's what makes a kind of an interesting thing with Deep Space Nine, is it's much more about how difficult it is to get there, rather than just saying, we've got there, hooray!
So, yeah.
It was Nichelle Nichols' last appearance on the original series. It's the last episode where you see all of the main characters in Star Trek.
The original series.
I read that. I wonder how Nichelle Nichols felt about that line and that scene, because that's kind of the only bit she's really in that episode.
I'm glad she got that moment, if that was her last appearance.
Yeah.
And there's a school of thought from what you read about her experience on the original series that would say her thoughts on having that line was, thank God I've got a line.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank God Shatner didn't steal that one from me.
There were episodes that she wasn't in because she was a singer, I think, at the time. She had a singing career, so she was away doing. So, I don't know. Maybe she's just happy to. You know, it's a gigging job, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she was going to leave the series, wasn't it? After series two, she was going to leave, and then I remember hearing she had a conversation with Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
He'd said to her, like, it's really important to see a black woman on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Yeah, that representation matters.
And that was what motivated her to stay in there, which is interesting. And
the original draft of his "I Have a Dream" speech,
It
was heavily Star Trek based.
He probably ripped it off from something Kirk said. That was it. Kirk loves speechifying.
So, have we got any other high points from the episode?
That feels like a resounding no.
who likes it the most would say no.
Why do we do this? Why do we pick the hard things to defend?
Somebody needs
to defend them.
I remember it coming across to me as being a bit bonkers and fun, and I thought there'd be lots to talk about.
I'm
sorry, Robert, we should have picked maybe a episode for you to join us on.
Yeah.
We've had some interesting points.
Yeah. I do feel bad for exposing Rob to a tough episode to love from the original series.
Yeah,
ones are interesting to look at because it forces you to try and pick out things that you like, and it makes you look at the things that perhaps didn't work and why it didn't work. So even the not so good ones are good to watch and think about. So. There's no bad ones, really.
Yeah, I think that's true, actually. I don't think there's enough... Even the weakest episodes of Star Trek, I still enjoy.
Yeah, I
struggle to think of an episode that I think is truly dire that I wouldn't watch again and find things to talk about.
I think I'd love all episodes, and I said this to Rob on Twitter earlier, but there are some episodes that I would leave a longer gap between watching again. This is probably one.
Aquiel might be another for you, Rick. I know you reference that frequently. That's a legendary weak TNG episode.
It is, yeah.
Fairhaven.
Oh, Fairhaven.
Oh, there's a very long gap between watching Fairhaven.
Threshold.
Oh, Threshold. Oh, God.
Threshold creeps up on me. Every now and again, I think, it can't be that bad, though. And I make myself watch it, and then I remember, yes, it is. It is that bad. Damn it.
Or that god-awful episode where Janeway... I keep going on about Voyager. The god-awful episode where Janeway goes into the holodeck with those irritating, like, Victorian children. That's horrendous.
Oh, yeah. It's like a kind of Jane Eyre program.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't go up to the basement. I mean, the attic.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, I've forgotten now, it's going to annoy me, but I found out something, one of those kids was in, is quite famous for another role years later. It's going to bug me what it is now.
Is that Thomas Decker? Because I think the young kid is an actor called Thomas Decker, and he played John Connor in the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, it might be something right. Like that, yeah.
I might be wrong.
Yeah. Okay, should we just go around and give our general then final opinion on the episode?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Who wants
if I start?
Go for it.
I think it was a very Star Trek idea that was very poorly executed, in all honesty.
I think it was a very Star Trek idea that they'd had before about 7 or 8 times, even in season 3. And then they put in the old recycler, they threw in a little bit of Abraham Lincoln, a pinch of Genghis Khan, and out came the Savage Curtain.
Well, weirdly, but in season 3 is the one that had where Gene Roddenberry was the least involved in terms of making it, but the story and the teleplay are written by him.
Oh.
Oh, right, so okay.
It's saying that it is, yeah.
That's interesting.
I would say that I have to admit, I kind of agree. It's a very flawed episode, but I admire its bonkers kind of story. And I really like that the effort they made to make the rock monster. I think it's got a certain charm to it. It's flawed. and the things that you like about it are probably unintentional in a way, but I think it's all right. I think it does highlight things about Star Trek, the original series, which that series did really well.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
This episode, it doesn't do it that well.
Yeah. Rob, final summation on it.
Wasn't the greatest. It was a bit silly at times, but there were some good bits, like, you know, the whole social commentary. The world of Star Trek's moved on from racism, and you know, we accept all people and differences, and the whole good versus evil and good triumphing. Yeah, I like that side of it. And it was interesting to see some unusual characters. But
yeah, it probably wasn't. Yeah. Great episode. Gemma, have you got anything to say? Anything else to say on it?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
Gemma has no more words to waste on this episode.
Yeah, I worry that this podcast could upset some diehard fans of the Savage Curtain, because I'm sure there are some. I'm sure there are people out there who love this episode, and we may have enraged them.
We may have, yes.
I thought the guy who played Abraham Lincoln was good. I thought he did a good Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, he did, which is the main thing he had to do. So yeah.
I suppose the whole, you know, we perhaps saw that it was a bit silly, like bringing in character like Abraham Lincoln and having him fight with Genghis Khan, but then in like TNG you had, you know, a robot essentially playing poker with Stephen Hawking and Albert Einstein and Sir Isaac Newton. It's no more ridiculous than that, I guess.
And a robot that went on to pretend to be Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
yeah, that's true.
And of course, they actually met Mark Twain.
Mm-hmm. So, did it? Which episode was that?
That was the end of series 5, two-parter.
Times Arrow, is that right? Right.
Madam Gannon, I declare that I find your stories about things hard to believe.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Star Trek has always had a bit of a dalliance with meeting historical characters.
Amelia
Earhart. Yeah, yeah.
It was 37s.
Is that in Voyager?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
37s, yeah.
I don't know if you said, did you like Da Vinci?
Yeah, who are?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Da Vinci.
Da
Vinci played by Gimli.
Gimli from Lord of the Rings.
Yes, yeah.
Salah from the Indiana Jones film.
Yes,
Yeah.
Racking my brains for other historical characters now.
I think DS9 and Enterprise only went to... yeah, I don't think they did it.
Well, I guess DS9 did... There was the time travel episode that revisited fake history, as in future from us histories, and Sisko kind of became a historical character in that.
Yes.
But not our history. Fake Star Trek history.
Yeah,
Kaelis
again.
Yeah.
Well, I think that brings us to the conclusion of our journey beyond the Savage Curve.
Before we descend into just listing historical characters that may or may not have appeared in Star Trek, I think we've.
So big thank you to Rob for appearing as our first guest. As we say, sorry about the episode choice.
I enjoyed it.
I think we should probably mention Rob is currently spearheading an initiative on Twitter regarding the Trek Book Club, looks. So I'm currently reading Avatar. Not currently right now. I'm doing a podcast, but in the time I'm not podcasting, I tend to be reading that book. Okay. So, and I think are we all set to discuss that in September?
I think the plan is to we're reading it in August and then discussing it at the end of August, so the last day. I think that's the current plan. It doesn't change.
Last day of August. Excellent. Yeah.
This will be a whole new podcast that you and Rob are doing, right, Rick? Separate to 10 Backwards.
Yes, it's in fact going to be.
Yeah.
We're going to accompany the Twitter discussion with a podcast, which me and Rob will be doing shortly after the Twitter discussion. So that should be interesting.
Yeah,
I can't wait for that. So it should be good fun. I'm probably going to try and get a slightly...
I was going to say, like, as someone that's never really... I've only read one of the books, so I just wanted to... Yeah, some sort of avenue to get into the books and for other people that haven't read them before to meet as a group and, discuss it and choose books, and I thought it would be a good one to do. That was my plan, anyway.
Oh, no, it would be fantastic. No, it's a fantastic plan, because I've been reading the novels on and off for years now, and there's a bunch of really good ones out there. So it'd be a really good opportunity to have some discussion about some of those with people.
Is it fair to say they're a mixed bunch, the Star Trek novels, would you say? There's a lot out there, right?
So, there's a huge amount, and some are fantastic.
Has Shatner written some Trek novels?
He has, yeah. I don't know, Rob, if you'd considered any of Shatner's for future book clubs, but they're not too bad.
Okay.
Because there are some that were really... there are some more recent ones. I mean, there's older ones that are quite good from what I hear, but there's some more recent ones that are really good. They explore, like, some of the characters and their backstories that we don't see about, like Garak and Dax, and looks at, like, the Dominion War after DS9 and rebuilding Cardassia. And so there's like some really good books in this.
There are between
like Enterprise and DS9 and Voyager, where you see, like, I think with Picard with Ezri Dax so interesting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Even some of the actors get involved. I know there's a story that purports to be the backstory of Garak, and that was actually written by Andrew Robinson.
Yeah, that's right.
Interesting.
Yes, that's the one. So and I think the guy who played Martok, J.G. Hertzler, he's written he co-wrote a story about Martok shortly after the Dominion War. So there's some interesting stuff out there.
Yeah, I feel slightly ashamed that my Star Trek book knowledge is very limited.
Yeah, mine too. Yes.
I might have to check out your podcast, Rick, and learn a bit about Star Trek novels.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty limited as well. That's why I'm doing it, to try and learn more, and so we can learn together.
Yeah.
I think that'll be quite good as well for the podcast, and that we'll have quite different levels of Trek novel experience going in. So you'll be the fresh eyes on Star Trek literature, and I'll be the jaded, cynical old guy who's like, oh, I remember when they were all like, I don't know, whatever they were.
Yeah. On paper.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when they're all on the paper. I used to go around W.H. Smith's flicking through them. Okay. Right. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. I think we will be seeing... Well, we won't be seeing because it's a podcast and therefore an auditory medium, but we will hopefully be back very shortly with new Star Trek subjects.
Indeed.
Yeah, so thank you very much for listening. Thank you again, Rob, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it. Thanks.
And we'll be back next time.
Okay, goodbye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Help me, Spock!
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward, 10 being the numbers 10 and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/10backwardpodcast, and you can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. on a personal individual level, my Twitter is @nerdrick, and I believe you two also have Twitters.
I do. Mine is @willturland.
Mine is @MrImhotep. MrImhotep.
So please do get in touch, give us any feedback or suggest new episode topics, anything like that.
Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
10 backward?
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10 backward. 10 backward.
Spur. It's me, Surak. Just met. But I got stuck.
Help me. I felt stuck.
One point about that. Is it that Surak is really good at impressions? Or is it Caleb. Because... Caleb, sorry. Or is it that the rock... creatures are really good at impressions.
Yeah. I took it as Kirk's perception of the ultimate Klingon would be someone sneaky. Who's devious, sneaky, and employed tricks like that. That's why I think that was my. Whereas that's why the real Kaelas is actually, you know, the epitome of honour and everything. But that's not how Kirk perceived Klingons at that time.
Yeah,
Also, that's Star Trek, I guess.
No, yeah.
Oh, this would have been good for the Savage. That's a really good point.
Oh well,
record it and insert it.
I'll edit it in.
Point,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Oh yeah, you have recorded it.
Yeah, I can edit that in.